You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, May 17, 2017.
Our mission is to provide higher education to Indiana residents. One way we do that is by bringing in students from Chicago and New York.
We hear about an ongoing housing dilemma at Indiana University later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, a new edition of our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton announced today he wants the city to give a piece of land on South Rogers Street to a nonprofit group that would build housing there. The proposed development would include 16 units with one or two bedrooms each. Rents would range from $550 per month to $850 per month. Hamilton described the development as part of an effort to encourage affordable housing near the planned Switchyard Park. Under the deal proposed by Hamilton, the city would lease the land for $1 per year to the organization South Central Indiana Housing Opportunities. The lease would be good for 99 years. Deborah Meyersons, the executive director of the nonprofit, she's quoted as estimating the complex would cost $1.2 million to build. The deal would require approval from the Bloomington Board of Parks Commissioners, which is listed as the legal owner of the land.
David Moore, the owner of Pictura Gallery, has purchased the former site of Blooming Foods in Elm Heights. In a recent press release, Moore announced his hope of making the site a destination spot for IU students, professors, and Bloomington families by, quote, complementing and bolstering the current social atmosphere through food, cocktails, conversation, or other combinations, unquote. Moore states the building will be compatible with the neighborhood, coincide with the way the building was originally constructed, and possibly be a restaurant or similar concept.
While IU Health moves forward with its plans for a $400 million new hospital on the northeast side of town, the Herald Times is reporting that plans to revitalize the old hospital site on 2nd and Rogers Streets have stalled. The chairperson of the Hospital Site Revitalization Committee, Bi Simpson, told the newspaper that the committee is waiting for the city and IU Health to hire an outside consultant in hospital design to guide the efforts. Terry DeMattis, the vice president of marketing and community relations for IU Health Bloomington Hospital, says that both IU and the city remain committed to assuring the current hospital site will, quote, continue to serve the citizens of Bloomington well into the future, unquote. But DeMattis says IU Health's current primary focus is on construction plans for the new hospital. Meanwhile, outlining potential reuses for the current hospital is a focus in the city's comprehensive master plan. And Simpson says her 32-person committee is eager to get back to work.
Officials in Monroe County are seeking information about closures of State Road 37 that are expected to happen daily throughout the summer. Crews constructing Interstate 69 are closing the road while they do blasting in the area. On Friday, City Planner Patrick Martin said I-69 developers have not directly informed local transportation officials about the closures. Martin told the Bloomington-Monroe County Metropolitan Planning Organization's Policy Committee that most of his knowledge of the closures came from the Herald Times.
Those will predominantly be, I believe, in the afternoon, 15 to 20 minutes at a time for the delay. I got caught in one of those last Friday. Mm-hmm. In Martinsville, the delay is significant. It's about a 45-minute delay. You're sitting there in traffic from Martinsville. But you can expect that throughout the entire summer. up until, I believe, the end of August is what the news report said. We had no information on it other than what appeared in the Herald Times.
The Herald Times quoted Indiana Department of Transportation project manager Sandra Flum as saying most of the closures would happen between 1 p.m. and 2:30 p.m. Flum also reportedly said some closures could happen later in the day. On Friday, Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton asked how drivers could track the blasting schedule.
Is there a way when I'm leaving Bloomington and I'm heading up to the airport or to Indianapolis that I can check to find out that day's actual schedule? Of, you know, it's going to be at 2 o'clock or it's going to be at 1 o'clock or it's going to be at 10:30 or they must. How much information can they share on that? Do you know?
I would imagine they should be fairly precise.
Martin told Hamilton he would research that question. Martin also took a question from Bloomington City Council member Andy Ruff, who raised concerns about a possible detour.
When there are planned closures and delays, I know trucks, it's not appropriate for trucks to do this, but one can go Bottom Road, Dittemore, on up and come out at the Paragon Bridge at 67 and get to Indianapolis pretty conveniently that way. Now, if they close that off, meanwhile, there's still a lot of work to be done north of there. That makes that route, that alternate route, more difficult to access. If people want to go county roads to Paragon at 67 and on up that way to the airport or the west side of Indy or to Indianapolis from that way. And is there any way to communicate a desire or to have a discussion about the possibility of not closing that till the project north of there isn't going to see such frequent delays?
Martin told Ruff he was doubtful that I-69 developers would agree to change the construction schedule, but Martin said he would ask for that to happen. Construction of the I-69 Section 5 is far behind schedule, and there are growing concerns about the future of the company, Isolux Corson, which is overseeing the project. Isolux, whose parent company is based in Spain, is in serious financial trouble and is undergoing a debt restructuring process in Spanish court. Last month, the national government of Bolivia rescinded a construction contract with the company worth more than $150 million after Isolux failed to meet deadlines. Isolux also lost a contract to build power lines in Brazil last year as a result of alleged breaches of contract.
Water damage at the Dimension Mill means renovation work will need to be done before winter arrives. Architect Craig McCormick of the Indianapolis-based Black Line Studio told the Bloomington Redevelopment Commission on Monday night that the old furniture factory is rapidly deteriorating due to, quote, buckets of water coming in through the roof.
It's pretty urgent, I believe, and my structural engineer believes that this work start to happen or some kind of roofing work happen as soon as possible. I think it's possible that there's enough water damage on some of the column points that if we were to go into wintertime and have some heavy snow loads, there potentially could even be some structural failure.
The city contracted with the Black Line Studio Architects to handle the Dimension Mill renovation last year. The Dimension Mill, part of an old furniture factory, is a central feature in the 12-acre trades district being redeveloped in downtown Bloomington. In a presentation to the Redevelopment Commission Monday night, McCormick reviewed the elements of the Dimension Mill renovation and projected costs. Repairing the water-damaged roof will be a significant portion of the project. McCormick said the roof slope will have to be refined and the east side of the sawtooth roof and its parapets will have to be rebuilt.
Currently, the reason we're having so many problems is that it's designed right now to slope to two points on the inside of the building, and water is literally coming in those places. Our plan is to rebuild that slope so that the water slopes completely away from the building and never has to go back in.
Another significant cost of the renovation is the basement. McCormick said the basement was originally designed for storage and machinery, not human use. Design plans call for a creating of a new open two-story entrance which relies on a firm foundation.
And I think what we're seeing in some of this selective demolition and excavation is that for us to get into that basement and create that taller, grander, two-story space, there's a fair amount of work that has to happen underneath to make that happen.
Water damage is also driving up the cost of interior structural repairs. McCormick said repairing and removing the rotted wood inside the mill will be a labor-intensive and time-consuming process. He did find a bright spot, though, when it came to repairing the floors.
There's quite a bit of wood on the south part of the building, flooring, that's now damaged beyond repair because there's so much water in there. But we think that when we open that two-story floor up, we should be able to salvage enough wood from that to patch all those areas and just refinish the floor with the wood that we have.
McCormick also said much of the wood removed to create the two-story entrance could be reused for custom features and furniture that would highlight the building's history as a furniture mill. Roofing, flooring, and foundation costs, combined with the new heating and air conditioning, lighting, and security systems, among other work, add up to a preliminary estimate of $2.4 million. Once McCormick added in contractor overhead design and project management fees and other line items, the grand total came to $3.9 million. This is nearly $500,000 more than was estimated by Kirkwood Design in a study commissioned by the city last year. McCormick told Commission member Dave Walter that costs during the last 5 years have risen 30% to 40% simply because contractors are so busy. Current plans would have the project bid on and construction begun by the fall of this year. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Full-time enrollment has reached an all-time high at Indiana University of Bloomington. With the high number of students coming in, dorms are nearing capacity and sometimes overflowing. Jabe Chappelle brings us this next story for today's WFHB Community Report. The story airs as part of a partnership between WFHB and a community journalism class at the IU Media School taught by Professor Michael Conway.
Indiana University has taken in the biggest number of students in history this year. Within the past 4 years, this number has risen by nearly 1,000 students, totaling over 43,000. The growing number forced students like sophomore Eric Berger to live in dorm lounges.
I was told that, you know, it might not exist, like housing might not be there, and just like wait to find out what the next step is. So I applied, and they told me I'm going to be in one of the lounges. I've thought about it before, and like, I realize there's a ton of people here, and it's really not a good position for IU to be like, hey, we don't have a spot for you.
Eric lived in the dorm lounge of Forest before moving to a dorm room in McNutt. Director of Enrollment Doug Anderson is part of the team that calculates the target number of enrollment each year. The admission team has to offer admission to more students than the target number to ensure that that target is hit.
It turns out to be a really complicated management task to make it all balance out. And we offer admission to a lot more students than we're going to enroll. We know that not everyone who's admitted is going to show up.
This target comes from Anita Funds for IU.
Yeah, we often have a target that's the budget target. We really need this many students for the budget. If we don't get that many students, then we're in trouble, and how are we going to cut things?
Doug says that low enrollment can be an issue when writing checks to faculty. Before students enroll, classes have already been offered and teachers have already been hired. In order to fill these classes and pay these teachers, the target number for enrollment must be hit.
If the students don't appear, the salary of the person teaching at the front of the room is the same, but less tuition's coming in to support it. So we try to get at least as many as we need for the budget.
Doug says deans are pleased with the overflow of students as it brings in more money for the school. Over the years, the funding that comes from the state has decreased dramatically, which stresses the importance of tuition.
If the state were really, really generous, and we had plenty, plenty of money, then we could aim for a lower class size.
In-state students pay an average of $21,700 per year. and out-of-state students pay an average of $45,500 per year. These numbers include room and board and tuition. The rising price of room and board could potentially lead to students taking out bigger loans to attend college. According to Kelly Thacker, director of housing at IU, Residential Services doesn't receive any help from the university for room and board costs.
RPS is an auxiliary, so that means that we get no money from the university. So the money that students pay in tuition does not come to us. Mm-hmm. We make all of our money off of the room and board rates. Then not only do we have to make money, but we have to have enough money to pay for our facilities and for the staff that we have.
Dr. Thacker said that housing doesn't get any say in the amount of students that come to IU. Housing satisfies the needs of the IU admissions team. International students and out-of-state students pay the most tuition, which makes their enrollment even more important to the admissions team.
We are Indiana University. Our mission is to provide higher education to Indiana residents. And the fact of the matter is that one way we do that is by bringing in students from Chicago and New York and California. If we didn't have those students paying out-of-state tuition, there are things we couldn't do for the Indiana native Hoosiers.
Residential Services has implemented two brand new living facilities and four building renovations to compensate for the rising student population. Dr. Thacker said that compared to other housing programs across the country, this is a very high number of builds and renovations. The particular dorms that have been built and received the renovations are now considered the nicer and more expensive living spaces. Some of these newer dorms come complete with air conditioning and personal bathrooms. Resident of Spruce Dorm, Camille Curlin, comments on her dorm choice.
It's also like a lot more spacious, and the walls and the carpet are really clean, so I think that's like nicer than the other dorms. I knew that I wanted to pick Spruce because I've always heard people talk about how, you know, gross or like unorganized write and read in those dorms are.
Spruce, formerly called Rose, is just 3 years old and costs just under $10,000 to live in. It is one of the nicest dorms on campus. Unfortunately, some students pay to live in dorms that aren't as nice. Dorms like Reed are usually at the bottom of the list for incoming freshmen. Jacqueline Neal comments on her dorm experience.
My experience in Reed, it was not very fun. There was no AC. The AC was like the kicker. Like if they actually had like good AC or like something better, like the location was better, I wouldn't have hated it. It wasn't miserable, but it wasn't, like, enjoyable.
Living in Reed costs less than $7,000, so it's a great choice for students aiming to save money. This particular dorm is on the list of IU buildings that have renovation plans which could raise the costs in the future. A potential issue of these new builds and renovations could arise as the number of 18-year-olds in the country decreases.
And we know that because of the 18 to 22-year-old population in the United States, has topped out. So if we look at like generation trends and like birth trends, I guess, back in 2011 is when we hit our peak of 18-year-olds. And so you're going to see a decline in the overall 18 to 22-year-old population in the United States, which then means that IU as an institution has to recruit from different places.
This could potentially lead to empty spaces in the new builds and renovations that housing is needed for the current overwhelming number of students coming to IU. The decline in this demographic is something that admissions is aware of and is working to decrease the impact it could make on IU housing.
We have charts showing state by state the population of 18-year-olds, and we know who's growing and who's shrinking, and yeah, we're aware of that, and there's intense pressure, intense competition for recruiting students.
The admissions team has full-time recruiters across the country and part-time recruiters overseas to fill the dorm rooms of Indiana University. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Jade Chappelle.
That story airs on WFHB as part of a partnership with a community journalism class at the IU Media School.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Wow. Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
The Better Business Bureau is warning of a new phone scam that's been hitting businesses and sometimes individuals lately. It's a two-part swindle. First, you get a call from someone who says he's a police officer. And of course, he's pretty much just the opposite. He asks questions about antisocial behavior in your area. Now, that's dodgy enough in itself, because one person's antisocial can be another person's free speech. But it's intended to establish his credibility and your trust before he hits you up for a donation to some law enforcement publication which he claims you have supported in the past. If you talk to this fraudster, another one calls you back a few minutes later and asks for that donation again. Don't fall for it. You'll actually be contributing to some bad guy's luxury retirement fund. Now, do you go to concerts, and are you on Facebook? In our community, the answer to both is likely to be yes, so heads up. There's a game that's become very popular on Facebook called 10 Concerts I've Been To and One Is a Lie. People post a list of popular musical acts they've seen perform live and include one they've never actually seen. Your friends are supposed to guess which one that is. But cybersecurity expert Joseph Ngami is warning that this innocent-seeming game could open you up to a nasty phishing attack. If you haven't set your privacy to friends only, anybody can see that list. And even if you have, if one of your friends' accounts has been hacked, the information may be visible to the wrong people. Con artists can then send you a fake email offering free tickets to one of those bands you said you liked, with a link to click. And, you guessed it, the free tickets are just bait, and that link is the hook, which will install something really nasty on your computer. And speaking of really nasty, the so-called WannaCry virus, also known as the Wanna Decryptor, has been hitting all over Europe. It's shut down computers throughout Britain's National Health Service hospitals. This is a ransomware virus. It encrypts all the files on your computer and demands money to unlock everything. It often arrives on a Microsoft Office email attachment and uses a flaw in Windows that was found by the American National Security Agency and leaked when the NSA itself got hacked recently. The really scary part is that this virus, unlike previous ones, can move itself to other computers on a network once it gets into one of them. Microsoft has patched the flaw if you've downloaded all the latest updates, but you'd better have your files backed up to some storage that's not connected to anything. And that goes for any computer that's connected to yours. Beware. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Kathy Norton and Joe Crawford, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Jade Chappelle.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts in 2015 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.